What's up, everyone? Welcome to TYT. I'm Anna Kasparian, and you guys are in for a treat because making her debut on TYT today is Malaika Jabali. She's an attorney and gardening columnist and just an overall incredible person who I actually learned about through the Michael Brooks Show. Malaika, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Anna. I'm excited myself. What a debut to be a co-host. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that you're, you know, everything that you've contributed to the Michael Brooks Show was incredible. And I was always really happy to see you on there. Then I started following you on social media and I'm just like, man, I want her voice on our show. So thank you again for taking the time to do it. And, you know, I wish there were more positive stories to comment on today. And to be fair, there is one great story that we'll talk about at the top of the show. The People's Party Convention. We'll show you some highlights of the speeches that took place. But unfortunately, the rest of the rundown is a continuation of what we saw last week. More violence that's being escalated through Trump's rhetoric and actions. We'll also talk about student loan debt later in the post game. You can become a member by going to tyt.com/join. And if you're thinking of ways to maybe support the show, one of the best ways to do that is to like and share the stream. Please do so. It takes a second and it really does help to get this show and the message that we're trying to spread out there to a wider audience. Also, one quick programming note for all of you. We are going to have a special tomorrow night after the main show to cover the Massachusetts primary. So make sure you check that out. That's an incredibly important primary race involving Alex Morris for Massachusetts' first district. Cenk Uygur and Ryan Grimm will be covering that, and coverage will be live at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, 4:30 p.m. Pacific. You can watch live by going to tyt.com/live. All right, well, without further ado, let's talk about what happened over the weekend. Because there are people who are fighting, they're doing it aggressively, and I think the message is important to talk about. The People's Party Convention took place over the weekend as an answer to what I think most people can agree was the disappointment that people felt following the RNC and the DNC. Now, the People's Party Convention had a number of wonderful speakers. I wish we can cover more of them in depth, but I did choose two highlights to discuss, including Bernie's 2020 campaign co-chair, State Senator Nina Turner, and the incredibly powerful words that she had to share. Let's take a look.
The old and the rich will live on a while, as always, eating blood and gold, letting kids die. Kids will die in the swamps of Mississippi, organizing sharecroppers. Kids will die in the streets of Chicago, organizing workers. Kids will die in the orange groves of California, telling others to get together. Whites and Filipinos, Negroes and Mexicans, all kinds of kids will die who don't believe in lies and bribes and contentment and a lousy peace. Hello, somebody. See, this poem encapsulates this very moment. Brother Langston Hughes is talking about this very moment. I hope you caught what he said. He said, telling others to get together, whites and Filipinos, Negroes and Mexicans, all kinds of kids will die who don't believe in lies and bribes and contentment and lousy peace. That is what the movement for People's Party is all about.
So Malaika, one of the things that really stood out to me in this convention versus the other two conventions was this message of, yes, inequality that disproportionately impacts Black people in America, but also the inequality that most Americans are feeling right now, experiencing right now, and just the lack of representation people have in government. And so this is really an answer to that. And just this aggressive message of, hey, we're not getting what we need from this two-party system. So I wanted to kind of get your thoughts. Did you watch any of the convention? And do you think that this type of messaging is resonating with a broader electorate?
I paid attention to the coverage. I haven't watched full slates, full slates of speakers. I'm actually in Atlanta to do some reporting on the Rashard Brooks case. And then before that, I was in Kenosha. So trying to squeeze in all these things that are happening in the news cycle. But I have been following along and keeping up with some of the organizers. And I think it's very refreshing, as we see from Nina Turner, that we have a formation of an organization, a formation of a party that's actually combining its policy with this rhetoric, with this inspirational message. You cannot have these two corporate-backed parties who say all these grand things about making America a great, making America great again, or building back America better, or whatever the Biden campaign has come up with. And then you look behind kind of that veneer and you see that it's very empty, that Joe Biden, on one hand, while Kamala Harris is talking about what she's going to do for Black people and breaking these glass ceilings, and then Joe Biden talking to Wall Street Journal reporters about the fact that actually we won't come up with the money to pay for all of these grand things, and he's pushing this progressive platform. So to have people who are actually interested in pursuing the policies that they speak on, I think is very, very powerful. It speaks to the fact that this movement is not dying. The radicalized movement of people who are either supporting Bernie Sanders or just holdovers from Occupy Wall Street and Black Lives Matter and a variety of these other movements, or millennials, the fact that they have some sort of avenue to actually pursue the policies that they've been fighting for is very encouraging. And we need that right now in a pandemic.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that this is the message that we need in the middle of the pandemic, right? And I really did think that there would be an aggressive case made for Medicare for All, for instance, as a result of what so many Americans, tens of millions of Americans, experienced as a result of getting laid off. They not only lost their income, they also lost the health insurance that comes along with that employment. And it was just frustrating to see how it was a layup, really, for Democrats if they actually genuinely wanted to push for that type of policy, but they did the opposite. They considered extending COBRA or expanding COBRA, which is a program that the majority of Americans can't afford, and they certainly can't afford it if they've lost their jobs and have no source of income. And so you're right. I mean, I think there are so many people right now who feel that they're not represented. It's incredibly discouraging to see what's happening in the country and not hear anyone in any position of power offer actual robust solutions. And again, what stood out to me about this convention is that these are people who are speaking to the material issues that Americans are experiencing right now and had been experiencing even before the pandemic, just that the pandemic has compounded it further. One of the other speeches that really stood out to me, and anytime he speaks, it stands out to me because he's such a great speaker, was Dr. Cornel West. So here's a highlight from his speech.
57 years and 3 days ago, the greatest public intellectual in the history of the American empire died in Ghana. His name was W.E.B. Du Bois. And that next morning, young brother Martin Luther King told America about a dream that he had, which was not the American dream, but a dream rooted in the American dream and has everything to do with the Movement for People's Party. Because what we're talking about here is a people who muster the wherewithal, who have not just the courage, but the fortitude to fructify. And by fructify, I mean to generate the fruits of truth telling, to generate the truth of justice seeking, to generate the truth of kindness and sweetness and gentleness in how we relate to each other, but with a steel spine when it comes to bearing witness in the face of oppression. That's why Du Bois raised the four questions. What does integrity do in the face of oppression? Oh, here's the movement in the People's Party. What does honesty do in the face of deception? Here is the People's Party at its best. What does decency do in the face of insult and assault? What does courage do in the face of brute force? We are living in a moment of massive imperial meltdown, spiritual breakdown, and we need prophetic fight back. And the People's Party is a prophetic fight back that, like Du Bois, believes in multiracial, multigender, multisexual orientation, or multibinary and non-binary sexual sensibilities and orientation. A solidarity with those Frantz Fanon called the wretched of the earth, that can tell the truth about America, both its best and its worst. Because let us never forget, each and every one of us come out of various families, communities, and traditions, so we have to be true for where we come from. And I come from a people who have been on intimate terms with catastrophe.
What always amazes me about Dr. Cornel West is how his answer to some of the worst elements of society is kindness and the ability to recognize his own flaws and not be overly judgmental to people who might make mistakes. I mean, he's a way better person than I am, because, you know, considering what we're going through right now in this country, it's hard to answer to certain things from a level of self-awareness and kindness, right? But what I love about his message is it always goes back to how this system really does serve as a negative for a lot of different people. With the exception of a small group, a few individuals who get to take advantage of the system, hoard the money, hoard the wealth, hoard the income, while other people are experiencing the ramifications of the system and at the same time lacking the representation needed to find and pursue real solutions.
Absolutely. He speaks to a kind of moral clarity and gravity that's really needed right now, because the bottom line is we are facing two different paths right now. We are allowing hundreds of thousands of people to die. And this is not just from a Trump administration. This is from decades and centuries of American individualism, of capitalism, of white supremacy, of all of these systems that have said, you know what, we're just going to put this in the hands of individuals, a few individuals, and of corporations. And so we have no public infrastructure. So at this juncture, are we saying that we are okay with that? Are we okay with hundreds of thousands of people dying and falling ill, and then people dying before the coronavirus, before the pandemic? Are we okay with hundreds of thousands of people being evicted and millions of people being homeless? So this is a moral, juncture for America. This is a moral question for anybody who cares about justice at all. And so I think it's very important to have that kind of, to have somebody who's thinking on that level. We know that it's also about power, and that's important for low-income people, for people of color to also gain positions of power. But you also want to get at the hearts of people, because everyone's not going to be out there fighting in the street. So are you going to be complicit in this problem or not? And I want to add too, I think it's important that he mentions people like Martin Luther King, who we just conceive of as this, you know, a pastor who was talking about love everybody, but he was also saying that America is fundamentally flawed, and that democratic socialism and having a fundamental revolution of our values was vital. And so you'll get MLK's message get co-opted by liberals the same way Ella Baker's message was co-opted by the Biden campaign during his speech. We're talking about two socialists. And so advocating for socialism, advocating for anti-capitalism isn't just some theoretical okie-dokie, you know, academic exercise. It's about morality. And he really calls attention to that.
Yeah, and he does it so well without antagonizing and demonizing, which is, it's just so difficult to do. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to discuss some of the unrest that took place over the weekend. Looks like a pro-Trump individual was shot and killed. We'll give you the details on that and more. So
we need to talk about a relatively new show called Un-the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Stick around. What's up, everyone? Welcome back to TYT. Anna Kasparian and Malaika Jabali with you. For those of you who are just tuning in, Malaika is an activist, an attorney, and also a Guardian columnist. So make sure you check out her work. And I'm going to read member comments in just a second. But before I do so, just wanted to remind you all of our sponsor, Aspiration, which is probably the only financial institution that I know of, at least, that will not invest any money in the fossil fuel industry. We've teamed up with them to do a sweepstakes, and the sweepstakes means that we're going to give away an e-scooter. So to learn more about that, just go to tyt.com/greensummer. That's where you'll learn all the details for your chance to win. Even if you're already doing your banking with Aspiration, not a problem. There are details on how you can enter for your chance to win as well. Again, just go to tyt.com/greensummer. And there was something else I was going to, thermometer. So today is the last day of August, which means that we are falling short of our fundraising goal to keep TYT sustainable. We are at, let's take a look, I think about $141,000, almost $142,000. So we haven't hit our goal of $200,000 for the month, but there are hours left. So just go to tyt.com/go if you'd like to help out and fund TYT. Let me read a few member comments. And Malaika, if you feel like jumping in to comment on any of these, please feel free. David Sursa says, "I think Nina, Ryan West, and the rest have the right idea. The establishment will do whatever they can to prevent the reformation of the party. So it's time for a new party." Well, I mean, I hear you. I just think that it's not going to work. It's not going to work this time around. I agree with their messaging. I don't judge anyone for voting whichever way that they feel they need to follow their conscience. But I think that this election, there's just a lot on the line. So I'm going to leave it there. Porkchop Express says, "Biden not coming to Kenosha today was a huge mistake. Democrats can no longer wonder why they lose votes. They don't need Republicans to sabotage them. They do it themselves." They've made a lot of mistakes. And I think that the national polling, especially if you look at polling from swing states, do show that. Unfortunately, that pretty wide gap between Trump and Biden has been narrowing, especially after the conventions. So that is something to keep in mind. And I'm going to go ahead and quickly read from the Twitch subs and donors. Little Mac G gifted 20 subs to the channel. Little Mac Mick G, thank you. All right, let's move on to the rest of the news. Story that I'm not looking forward to talking about, but it is what it is. So, a pro-Trump individual was shot and killed following a night of clashes between Trump supporters and anti-racism protesters denouncing police brutality in Portland, Oregon over the weekend. Now, we keep seeing these instances of protesters getting met with vigilantes, and this is yet another example of that. Unfortunately, last week, we had to report on a story of an armed militia member who gunned down two protesters in Kenosha. Aaron Danielson, a supporter of the far-right extremist group Patriot Prayer, was shot in the chest and died in the street. It was soon after most cars in a caravan of supporters of President Donald Trump had left the city's downtown streets. Aaron Danielson also goes by the name Jay. So I just want to point that out in case there's some confusion with how this is covered or things you might have seen in social media. But there are videos of what happened. They're grainy. A lot of them are shot from different angles from far away. We do have one of those videos for you. It is graphic. It's difficult to watch. So with fair warning, this is what happened. So there are still details that, you know, and questions that have gone unanswered. But here's what we know so far. Prior to the shooting, Aaron Danielson was seen with Chandler Pappas, who is a member of Patriot Prayer. Earlier, they spoke to a local reporter in Portland who posted this following tweet. Chandler Pappas and another man who declined to be interviewed, that was actually Danielson, are here with Patriot Prayer gear plus paintball guns plus knives at the Trump rally in Portland. In fact, Chandler was quoted as saying, "I'm here to stop people from assaulting these people," meaning the Trump caravanners or Trump supporters. So here is a photo of Aaron Danielson. And in it, you can see him wearing the hat that's usually worn by Patriot Prayer members. And here's what we also know about him. Michael Forrest, here's what we know about the person who allegedly shot him. His name is Michael Forrest Reynal. And he calls himself an anti-fascist and has posted videos and photos of demonstrations he attended since late June. On July 5th, at one of the demonstrations, he was cited at 2:10 a.m. on allegations of possessing a loaded gun in a public place, resisting arrest, and interfering with police. He was given a date to appear in court later that month, but the allegations were dropped on July 30th with a no complaint. He's also wanted, or was wanted, on a failure to appear warrant in a June 8th speed racing case in Eastern Oregon. He and his 17-year-old son were racing in two different cars at speeds of up to 111 miles per hour. He faces allegations of driving under the influence, recklessly endangering another, unlawful possession of a gun, and driving while suspended and uninsured. So I'm giving you all the details of what we know about the suspect in this case, about the person who was shot. Also, the sister of the suspect was contacted by Trump supporters and right wingers and threatened. This was reported by the Oregonian, where they say that she was awakened just before 8 a.m. Sunday by a threatening phone call from someone who told her that, quote, "our whole family was in danger unless we turned him over." By the way, she did help authorities identify her brother as a suspect. So Malaika, you know, I know that over the weekend, there was another Trump caravan in the San Fernando Valley, you know, a place where I grew up. And I personally witnessed people in trucks driving by, tormenting random bystanders who weren't even protesting, who weren't even doing anything wrong, and attempting to provoke them. And so I'm not going to pretend as if these are people who show up to protests with the intention of protecting people. I mean, we've seen them escalate violence and escalate tensions with people who are just trying to protest. But I did want to get your thoughts on what happened, because, you know, on one hand, we have Donald Trump and right wingers encouraging them and goading them. And, you know, police don't seem to have an interest in actually protecting people during these escalations. I mean, how many cases have we seen where the violence is escalating and the cops are nowhere to be found?
Yeah, I think this follows a list of interactions, and it's kind of reaching its tipping point right now. We've seen this from the beginning of George Floyd protests at the beginning of the summer. We've seen this with Kenosha just last week, where I was spending my time reporting. I heard the gunshots. I felt the tear gas from the police officers. And now we're hearing about this over the weekend. And I think it's important to condemn any sort of meeting out of street justice. We know that we need protests. We even need to be escalating the kinds of confrontations that we have with the state. But when it comes to confrontations amongst people, that can't be meted out fairly just on the streets, because that can lead to pandemonium and it undermines the movement. At the same time, I do not think that we can pretend that these are equal or equivalent sort of power dynamics. We have a president right now, an occupant of the White House, who has yet to condemn the Kenosha shooter, has yet to say anything about the role of the police in possibly instigating or participating and giving comfort and aid to these vigilantes who crossed street lines. At least one of those, the person who shot the two gentlemen or killed two people and then shot three others and then shot at the crowd. We have yet to hear any commentary from the president, who has created this kind of environment. And so he has all these words about violence from one side, and we need to be condemning all of it when it comes to this kind of, you know, people dying in the streets. So we cannot, you know, ignore the power dynamics here, where we have an entire administration who's okay with one type of confrontation and says, you know, that he wants to bring more troops to defeat another.
Yeah, I think that you make such a great point there, because the power dynamic is important. On one hand, you have protesters and you know, the violence should be condemned. Like, no one's standing up for, you know, what the suspect in this case did. But look, we're also living in a country where we're swimming with guns. And to your point about the power dynamic, you have the Trump administration and his, you know, political supporters, political infrastructure, constantly greenlighting, excusing, and emboldening this type of violence from their supporters, right? And so, you know, over the weekend, I tweeted that people in the San Fernando Valley who come across these Trump protesters, the caravanners, whatever you want to call them, ignore them, because I get that they're going to try to provoke you. I get that they're going to scream at you. They're going to say all sorts of annoying things. They're going to try to get under your skin. But that is what they want, right? The messaging from the right wing, unfortunately, the propaganda from the right wing is way more powerful and way more effective than the left trying to defend itself. And so they run with this narrative. Like, they'll provoke violence, things will escalate to the point where violence breaks out, someone gets hurt, and what do? They turn themselves into the victims. And so I'm not saying that people should not defend themselves. If someone tries to physically harm you and you literally have to use physical means to defend yourself, that's a different thing. But if these Trump caravanners come to your town and they're trying to provoke you into doing something physical, when you give in, you're giving them exactly what they want. So it's about strategy, it's about being savvy, and it's about understanding what they're trying to do. And I'm not surprised that in case after case, story after story, we see the cops just like stand by and allow this type of stuff to happen, right? Anyway, I don't want to speculate about what they want.
Yeah, and I want to add too that we have a media apparatus that encourages this kind of narrative. And so this narrative narrowing of, you know, these polling numbers isn't just because people are like, oh, okay, I guess Black Lives Matter is terrible now. We also have a media that's drumming this beat that this is coming from, you know, of course, these are cities that are democratically controlled, but we have our own issues with, you know, why that's happening in democratic cities. But we're also living under the auspices of a regime that is encouraging this kind of vigilantism and violence. And so Donald Trump, this is not like a Nixon 1968 campaign where Lyndon Johnson was in office. He's in office right now. He's the Lyndon Johnson. So if he wants to critique what's happening in the streets, he needs to critique not only, you know, what we can see visibly, but what are the policies that have led to people being so frustrated where they're crossing, you know, these lines. I can't speak for what happened in Kenosha, but for other people who are frustrated, bored, they're buying weapons and they've got nothing else to do and nothing to live for.
Yeah, no, you make such a great point. I mean, one of the things that's kind of been frustrating about how the media has covered the Black Lives Matter movement is that they've completely ignored the economic component of the message, right? I mean, everything has been boiled down to, oh, this is just about identity. But yes, it is about identity, but it's also about how the economic system that we're functioning under has crushed people, right? And that has been completely ignored. I mean, it was ignored with MLK's speeches and the way that we remember him in the media. And it's certainly being, you know, it's being handled and manipulated the same way right now. And so that's why every time you hear commentary from a politician, they never address the root of the problem. They never address the root of why there are so many people taking to the streets right now. They just boil it down to, oh, it's Trump, he's divisive. And to be sure, he absolutely is. He loves the chaos. He loves to play into the divisions in this country. But it's not just about Trump. I mean, Black Lives Matter isn't a new movement. This is a movement that really formed during the Obama administration when we had a biracial president. And so what are the real issues at play here? Systemic racism is part of it. The economic inequality is also part of it. And it's that message is just being completely ignored and brushed to the side. And I think that's a huge mistake. All right. And then one final thing I wanted to mention about this story. You know, when Kyle Rittenhouse gunned down two protesters in Kenosha, we heard a lot from the right wing about, oh, well, he was a patriot and all he's trying to do is protect people's property and businesses. Keep in mind that he was pretty far away from the so-called business that he was trying to protect. He was nowhere near a business when he gunned down his first victim. But the reason why I bring that up is because when you look at the rhetoric used by the suspect in the shooting that happened over the weekend, it's very similar. All this grandiose nonsense about, I'm gonna do this and I'm gonna save these people, I'm gonna save those people. And so what does the right wing think now? Does the right wing think, oh no, this is just a patriot who's trying to save people? Let me read you his quotes. One of his quotes is from June 16th, 2020. He says, I'm willing to fight for my brothers and sisters. We do not want violence, but we will not run from it either. Today's protesters and Antifa are my brothers in arms. He also said in a video posted on July 27th, that he had been shot and turns to the camera to show a bloody Band-Aid on his right arm. He claimed he intervened in an earlier fight between a man with a gun and black youths. So I don't know the details of that. I wasn't able to confirm that he was actually shot or what he was saying was accurate. But he has that same mentality of, I'm doing this to save people or to protect people. We can't have vigilantes. That's not to say that you can't defend yourself if you need to, right? I'm not saying that you just stand by while someone gets hurt. But at the same time, if the right wing is gonna use this rhetoric of, oh, well, it's a patriot trying to protect people. Yeah, it's vigilanteism and we're supposed to have laws against that. Well, they have to extend that to everyone who wants to act as a vigilante during these protests. And of course, they're not willing to do that. Of course, they're willing to make excuses for one group while demonizing the other.
Right. Yeah, we know that's definitely going to happen. And that's precisely why, you know, when you looked at the civil rights movement and you looked at even the Black Power movement from the Black Panthers, it was always about self-defense, because as radical as the Black Panthers were, they understood that the state was going to be against them, especially being a very vocal left-wing Black organization. You could not just go out there and instigate violence. And so if you claim to be an ally with these social justice organizations, with these Black liberation movements, that is going to undermine the cause. I will also say that I'm waiting a little bit for information, for more information to come out to get some more details about this, because this is a little convenient, you know, not to be a conspiracy theorist, but it is a little convenient to have this narrative right now, right after Kenosha, in the midst of these Trump rallies. And I want to shout out Fred Hampton, an esteemed legendary Black Panther who was killed out of a conspiracy. So, you know, you have these counterintelligence movements that try and undermine the movement. And so I'm looking to see if there's any information that's tied to that. His birthday would have been yesterday, August 30th. A real hero of mine who advocated for this kind of working class solidarity and also understanding the specific ills that plagued the Black community. And federal agents and local police departments conspired to kill him in his own home. And then the narrative that came out from the media immediately was that there was this shootout. And so we hear this kind of false equivalence. Oh, it's both sides and there's violence everywhere and both parties need to stop you know, the violence and engaging in vigilantism. And oftentimes it's one-sided. It's coming from one side primarily. So I'm personally waiting for more information to come out before I make any, you know, absolute declarations. Again, if this is true and if he is associated with Antifa, then that kind of one-on-one street justice should be condemned. But I also understand the power of the American state to impose, you know, fascism and imperialism and white supremacy.
Yep, that's a great point. I do want to go to one other angle to this story that isn't getting enough attention. And I think it's important to show that whatever violence is carried out against Trump supporters, keep in mind that that is not in any way illustrative of what Black Lives Matter is about and what they're trying to demonstrate about. So this is the story that I think should be on everyone's mind. So video of the aftermath of the shooting death of a Patriot Prayer member in Portland shows a Black Lives Matter medic rushing to his side, attempting to provide medical aid, only to be pushed aside by cops who allowed him to bleed out. Okay, so this is the story about Aaron Danielson, who was shot over the weekend. And I'm going to show you the video. It's after he's already been shot. You're going to see a BLM demonstrator rush to his aid, and then just keep close eye on how the cops handled it. The medic who attempted to help him, Sierra, did tweet about the experience. I want to share her tweets with you. She says, "I was one of two medics on the scene when the man who died last night was shot. I barely had time to begin an examination before the cops pushed and batoned me off his body. That man was alive when I left, and it will haunt me for the rest of my life that they screamed about having a real medic and none was on scene, and that man not but 20 minutes later was confirmed dead. When I close my eyes, I can only see his face and the murderous rage in the eyes of a cop abusing me to force me away from helping him as best I could." So I share that with you because, you know, well, for two reasons. First of all, there is this narrative, especially from dishonest actors from the right, meant to paint these demonstrators as dangerous people, as individuals who want to see violence, who want to see death, who want to see destruction. And that couldn't be further from the truth. But the very people that they're trying to protest about are the ones who pushed this medic away and, you know, didn't allow her to provide the medical aid he clearly needed in that moment. And so this is the narrative that doesn't get talked about. People just ignore it. But it's an important angle to this story. The first person who ran to the man on the ground, again, Aaron Danielson is his name, was Chandler Pappas, his friend. And the very first thing he did was push a female medic. And then later, after it was clear that she was a medic, he allowed her to come back and try to administer aid. But you know, that's one angle to the story. Again, Malaika, that just no one seems to care about. you know, everyone runs to their corners and the right wing continues their propaganda campaign against Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, you're right. It's this idea of people going to their corners. It's tribalism. It's an easy narrative. When I was on the ground in Kenosha and I was looking at the protests that were happening and the marches that were happening down Sheridan Road, which is the main corridor that intersected the courthouse where a lot of this activity was happening, people were out there of all colors, all ethnicities, and they're simply trying to engage, you know, their political, their constitutional rights to assemble and to protest. And most were doing so. And I want to be clear here, because I don't want to make this distinction between, you know, people who might be, a lot of folks, you know, don't want to see the looting and confrontations with police. And unfortunately, in American history, until we had arson, until we had people damaging, you know, public property, we did not get the sorts of laws that we need to pass. So I'm not trying to make that distinction here between like looters and peaceful protesters. But at the same time, I saw so much de-escalation coming from Black Lives Matter protesters who are still dealing with their own tragedy. These are people's cousins. Philando Castile, you all may remember, he was shot by a police officer in Minnesota. His girlfriend was the one who live streamed it. She was in the car with him, with her child. Her daughter has grown up now. And so they were both at this protest, and they were just trying to assert that their lives matter, a very simple and basic message. And so we saw armed militia, or whatever you want to call these people, in the park for hours, all day long. And they would get there ahead of the large crowds getting there, a handful of them, to try and de-escalate, to make sure that it didn't get out of hand. That was all through conversation. So whatever happens after that, it gets pinned on these protesters and not from the people who are committing the violent acts. So you have somebody who's coming after to actually assist. And unless we get, you know, things like TYT and Twitter, we don't find out these stories, because it's easy to just condemn and villainize people who are fighting for their rights, and frankly, Black people who are criminalized historically in this country.
I want to leave it right there. I think you're absolutely right. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll jump into other topics, including what it means to be a journalist who wants to cover the unrest in Portland. Looks like a 3-judge panel has done away with certain protections that journalists should be given based on our constitutional rights. And then later in the show, likely in the post game, we'll talk about what's happening with coronavirus and how the Trump administration is trying to fast track a vaccine even before it passes clinical trials. We'll be right back.
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to TYT. Anna Kasparian and Malaika Jabali with us. First time on TYT, and hopefully won't be the last. Again, thank you, Malaika, for doing this. So I wanted to read a quick super chat comment from Vicious C, who says, I was going to say, Anna, Dr. West has referred to the orange idiot as Brother Trump. He's a way better person than me. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know that Dr. Cornel West played a huge role in Michael Brooks's evolution and how he thinks of certain elements of society and how to handle people that you disagree with. I'm trying to evolve, to be a better person, to find a way to communicate as effectively as Dr. West does, because I think it's important. All right, well, we have limited time, so let's move on to our next story. And it just shows you just how unbelievably gross Republicans have become. Steve Scalise had to delete a video that he tweeted that featured Addie Barkin. He is a well-known activist for single-payer healthcare. The video manipulated what Addie Barkin was saying during a conversation with Joe Biden. And it was manipulated in a way to make it appear as though Joe Biden is in favor of defunding the police. Now, Scalise used that as a way to demonize Biden for wanting to defund the police, which, I mean, I guess for the right wing, that is bad. But the fact that he took the words of someone who can't speak vocally because he has ALS and manipulated his words in this doctored video gives you a sense of exactly what the right wing is, who they are, and how they will not stoop. There is no level too low for them to stoop to. So Twitter flagged a video shared by the second ranking House Republican Scalise on Saturday as manipulated, as it spliced quotes together from an activist who again speaks through computer voice assistants, making it sound as though he'd convinced Joe Biden to defund police departments. So I want to go to this graphic, which shows you a side by side of how it was manipulated. On the left hand side is what Addie Barkin actually said, but do we agree that we can redirect some of the funding? And then on the right hand side are the doctored words that were included in the video. Do we agree that we can direct some of the funding for police, redirect some of the funding for police? Now, Steve Scalise was confronted about this first by Barkin himself, who tweeted, "These are not my words. I have lost my ability to speak, but not my agency or my thoughts. You and your team have doctored my words for your own political gain. Please remove this video immediately. You owe the entire disability community an apology." And so Scalise did delete that tweet. And I'm going to skip ahead to this next video where he tried to defend himself. Let's take a look.
So you're taking some heat over the weekend from Twitter because you took the last part of that. But you added from earlier in the interview, the police, and put it right in there. And you were accused of manipulating a video. What do you have to say about that?
Well, you know, look, it shouldn't have been edited, but at the same time, the comments were always about, in fact, twice in that interview, he asked Joe Biden if he was for redirecting money away from police. And in both times, Joe Biden said yes. And you saw that last response. Joe was excited about saying yes, that he would redirect money away from police. So, you know, look, we sent out the video again, the full video, in fact, if anybody wants to see it with that full interview. But again, multiple times Joe Biden is asked if he supports redirecting money away from police. And Joe Biden says yes. And look at what's going on in some of these cities. They need maybe stronger law enforcement presence. Surely they don't need a weaker law enforcement presence.
Let me just note that even in that interview, Steve Scalise lied. In fact, Biden has proposed spending $300 million on local police departments. Just a little fact that was left out of that conversation. And Scalise himself is garbage. In fact, back in 2017, Stephanie Grace, a political reporter in Louisiana, told the New York Times in late 2014 that Scalise once said he was like David Duke without the baggage, referring to the white supremacist and former Klansman. He's an awful person. There's really no other way to put it. Malaika.
For a party that cares so much about fake news, they really do promote a lot of it. I wish Joe Biden were really committed to defunding the police. And part of the problem is that Democrats have not fully owned what comprises so much of their base. You have a lot of progressives, you have a lot of Black people, you have a lot of activists who are on this side who are saying not having police enforcement or law enforcement does not mean that we cannot have safe communities. In fact, if you can redirect some of this funding for people who are being communities that are being over-policed and over-militarized and that they're being harassed daily, that is a form of violence. And so if you can redirect that towards social services, then you can actually have public safety. But right now, what we have are ballooning police budgets, and still we have crime. We still have police officers who are committing crime. So I would love if Joe Biden was actually committed to this, but he's not. And so the Republican Party, as usual, is using this as a cultural tactic instead of actually having concerns about public safety or disability or people who have disabilities or anything relating to folks who are on the margin.
No, you're so right about it. And what we kept hearing over and over and over again during the Democratic primaries was this ridiculous notion that, oh, Biden, since he's moderate, is much more electable. He won't be attacked by Trump the way that Bernie Sanders will be attacked by Trump. But what do you think the Trump administration is doing right now? What do you think the campaign is focusing on? It doesn't matter. The candidates are interchangeable for the Republican Party. They're interchangeable for the Trump campaign. We keep hearing about how Biden is some radical leftist, which, I mean, I wish, but that's not the case. He's not a radical leftist, not even close. And he keeps conceding to what Bush-era Republicans want, what makes Bush-era Republicans comfortable. And no one wins in that situation other than Republicans, right wingers, and no one in the Democratic base. So look, there's a video that Brett, our supervising producer, put together that we're going to show in the post game today in response to this, because you have all these right wingers in the media who are trying to sell all sorts of like ridiculous scam supplements. But I think some members in the Republican Party are taking like drugs that help them lie like this so openly, so transparently, without any worry of immorality. Like the fact that Scalise can just take the words of someone who's disabled, someone whose disability literally has prevented him from vocally speaking, to manipulate that and use it for his own political gain. No shame. He goes on Fox News and is just like, yeah. No, the message still stands. It's incredible. That's who we're up against. It's unbearable. Anyway, so we have a few more minutes, not minutes. We have a little while left. So I'm going to take this opportunity to read a few of your super chats. And Malaika is kind enough to join me for the post game, where we have lots of stories to get to, including this awesome video that Brett produced. Tails says, hey, love you. I know people want to get out, but as someone who lives here, please stop coming to Vegas. The hotels are lying about testing and contact tracing in their staff, and the cases don't stay here, they go back home. So just a little warning for you guys, if you're desperate to go to Vegas, don't do it, because there's this illusion, this myth of safety and contact tracing. All right, our post game is next. You can become a member by going to tyt.com/join, and you don't want to miss today's episode. We're going to talk about a lot of important stories. See you there.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.